From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A devastating report on the conditions facing undocumented children and families under the Trump administration's harsh policies has been filed in court as part of an ongoing case over whether the government violated the 1997 Flores settlement. The report called interviews with more than 200 parents and children that had been held in detention in border states in June and July of this year. Peter Shea, an attorney representing some of the children, said, quote, "They have spoken out loud and clear, and what they've said is they are experiencing enforced hunger, enforced dehydration, enforced sleeplessness. They are terrorized, and I think it is time for the courts and the public to hear their voices." Meanwhile, the Trump administration has still not finished reuniting all children under the age of five, as per a judge's order to do so by a deadline that has already passed. The next major deadline to reunite older children is July 26th. That group is at least 2,000 strong. My guest is Juan Escalante, communications manager with America's Voice. He's a DACA recipient, and he's the immigration correspondent for our program. Welcome back to the show, Juan.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
So what is the status, as far as you know, of that first group of kids that was to be reunited with their parents, that group that's under the age of five that the judge ordered had to be reunited by, I believe it was a July 5th deadline, about 100 yeah. plus kids that were supposed to be reunited. And last I read, it was only about 57 or 60-ish kids that had been reunited. Is that still the case?
Well, there's no denying that the Trump administration is dragging their feet on reunifying children with their parents. This is a cruel and jaw-dropping mixture of not only incompetence, but malevolence on part of an administration that's dead set on, you know, making the life of immigrants and people seeking asylum as difficult as possible in this country. Now, what you may see in the news is completely accurate. The numbers are staggering when it comes down to, you know, what the Trump administration is essentially saying, that the children being reunified are not being done so at a expedient manner. In any case, many of these children are being reunified at a very slow rate. And at the bottom, at the very bottom of this issue is the number of people and organizations out there in Texas and in the border and in communities across the country that find themselves trying to reunify children with parents that are fighting for mothers and fathers who find themselves in freedom after being processed and released from detention, to be allowed to use it, you know, to be allowed to reunify with a child that they may not have seen in weeks, if not months by now. And I'm sure that folks may have seen in the internet some of the very crushing videos where mothers and fathers find themselves crying after seeing their small children after a prolonged period of time. Sometimes some of these children have blank stares in their faces. I think that there was a story in the New York Times where a small child essentially was calling not for their mother, but rather for one of the people who was caring for her at one of these detention facilities. So it's very troubling the amount of psychological trauma that these children are being exposed to, number one. But number two, also the way in which this administration is poorly handling the reunification attempts between parents and children.
Now, I understand that some of the reasoning behind why all the children haven't been reunited includes suggesting that the parents may not actually be biologically related to the kids. There were reports that the government was going to need to do and had already been doing DNA testing to ensure that the kids that they took away from parents were actually related, which in part suggests that when these kids were ripped away from their parents, there was no thought to it. They weren't keeping track of who was linked to who, right?
Absolutely. I think two things kind of rise to the occasion in this specific manner. Number one is the fact that the government was very quick in acting to separate these families. They took their child away and didn't give it a second thought as to how the reunification process was going to play out.
It was almost as though they didn't plan on reunifying the kids ever.
There was an interview, and this is essentially something that really stuck with me over the past couple of weeks as this story has continued to unfold. And this is a story that ran in Spanish language media here on the East Coast, where a mother essentially who had been separated from her child said, it was very easy for the government to rip my child away from me. Why is it so hard now to return it back to me? And look, you know, we know that the Trump administration is not acting in good faith whatsoever. They created this problem, as we have discussed, by purposely taking the child away from the parents without a plan on how to reunite them. And that gets to the specific of the problem. The government lost the records that would have matched this particular child with the specific parent, and now they're using every single excuse available to them to delay reunification and to keep this perpetual nightmare and embarrassment that the government has created as long as possible.
So when the government claims that they have to make sure that they're releasing kids into the hands of their actual parents, they make it sound as though they're doing this in the best interest of the kids. But of course, you know, that's hard to believe given the current action so far. So the government has passed that deadline. Judge Dana Sabra in San Diego, who was the judge that was ordering the government to meet this deadline, had to decide whether or not the government should face any sort of repercussions for breaking the deadline. I understand that he is sort of giving the government a little bit of leeway, but now the second deadline is looming July 26th, right, by which all children under, you know, over the age of five, and presumably under as well, have to be reunited with their parents. Do you know how that's going?
You know, if history is of any guide to us as to how this administration is treating immigrants, refugees, TPS holders, and people seeking to come into this country by petitioning for asylum, then we have to assume that this is going in a very poor an effortless manner by part of the administration. The only reason that the administration is reunifying families right now is because a judge ordered them so by holding their feet to the fire and forcing them to deal with the mess that they have created. So we're facing a second deadline to which the Trump administration may or may not pay any sort of attention to, claiming, as you said, Sonali, that they are trying to act in the best interest of the child. But in what world has this administration ever cared for an immigrant child, a refugee child, a DACA beneficiary, or any form of immigrant, of a person who is trying to make it in the United States by trying to do the right way and either petition for a legal status or work their hardest to make sure that they are productive members of this country? And the answer is none. You know, so me as an advocate, who continues to see, you know, this type of stuff, not only in the news, but for some of our partners on the ground who continue to do very amazing work by reunifying families, it becomes very difficult to believe that this administration has anything to do with the good faith of the child or anything to do with the deadline set by a court. Many times, you know, we've seen that the president has no problem in attacking a judge, the court decision, or the circuit that they sit on, just because they disagree with them. So therefore, you know, for me, it becomes very difficult to believe that this administration will fulfill its promise or its duty as mandated by the court.
And in fact, the Trump administration did claim that it met that original deadline for the kids under the age of five, even though it hadn't finished reunifying all kids. I assume the government simply meant that it had decided that it was done. And Judge Dana Sabra also had refused to extend the deadline, but also issued a new ruling saying that he would not, does not want the government to deport recently reunited families for at least a week, suggesting that what the U.S. was basically doing was handing kids back to their parents, and before these people could take a breath from the horrible trauma they've just experienced, putting them presumably on a plane or dumping them across the border right away. I don't know if you know whether that's actually been happening, but the judge ordered it to not happen for at least a week.
Yeah. So what we have heard from some of our partners and some of the organizations handling and processing the stories of these families and trying to reunify them says essentially that the government, and I want to make sure that I emphasize this properly, because it's probably, you know, everything about the story is just as horrific, but it's just another dimension of cruelty to understand that our government, you know, taxpayer dollars have gone to the deportation of the parents of almost 19 children under the age of five. 19 children have lost, who are under the age of five, have no parents in the United States as of this moment because of the government's actions to go ahead and process this, the mother or the father, deport them back to the country of origin without a child. So imagine what exactly must it feel like to be taken out of your home, ripped away from your child, and being placed thousands of miles away without any sort of certainty or guarantee that you may see that child again. Despite the fact that you were trying to flee dangerous conditions to provide that child with a better life and a better stressful circumstances and opportunities in a country that we have famously claimed has been built on the backs of immigrants and by their effort and their labor. So it's, you know, it, as a DACA beneficiary and as an immigration advocate, I continuously find myself perplexed and embarrassed by, you know, the behavior of this administration while simultaneously understanding that, you know, this is only one of the most horrific facets that they or strategies that they have unleashed to in their fight to scapegoat immigrants, you know, whether they're in this country or trying to come into this country and blame them for anything that goes wrong within the United States. While simultaneously fighting in other fronts, you know, I will be remiss if I didn't mention that there's another couple of deadlines coming for the DACA program, particularly on the legal side, where a court will essentially try to define the future of myself and almost 800,000 Dreamers in this country as well. So, you know, as horrific as we find ourselves in talking at the story and as heart-wrenching as these videos may be, we have to remember that this is essentially something the administration wanted. This is not an accident. This is not, you know, something that the administration just, you know, dropped the ball on. They have been planning this since day one when Donald Trump announced his candidacy and insulted immigrants from Mexico. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have to remind ourselves that they are essentially moving forward with their anti-immigrant agenda and figuring out ways to deploy it as far and broad-reaching in this country as possible.
Well, thank you for the DACA update as well. Let's talk about the report that I mentioned earlier. So a report has been filed in court as part of a lawsuit suggesting that the government has violated the Flores 1997 Flores settlement and is also violating the rights of people being undocumented. A number of volunteers around the country in southwestern states like Texas essentially gathered testimony from about 200 children and adults. I'll put them together in a report, and I quoted the attorney earlier who's representing some of the kids, Peter Shea, who said these kids are terrorized. This, you know, in the scandal around the Helsinki summit this week, this report is not getting very much media attention. And I'm wondering, Juan, if you can summarize for our audience some of the worst aspects of what you found in this report about the conditions immigrants are facing, including little kids.
Yeah, I think, you know, as you mentioned, we can't let ourselves be distracted from the story. There's no doubt that what the president did in Europe is just equally as abhorrent. By praising one of our adversaries. But bottom line is that, you know, right now we're coming to learn some of the circumstances by which, you know, that parents and children have endured. And I know that we discussed some of the stories that have gone to print in the New York Times, but there's just an equally traumatizing and horrific story that has been published on the Huffington Post that essentially, and, you know, I just want to read a very quick excerpt so that folks kind of grasp the magnitude of what we're talking about this when, you know, people are complaining about some of these detention facilities, some of which have been praised by pundits, conservative pundits, Republicans and others, saying that they're summer camps, that they're better conditions than the ones that they fled on, that they're essentially living better than some of the poorest Americans in these United States. And, you know, I just want to make sure that this clip makes it so that folks understand. This was published recently in the past 24 hours by the Huffington Post, in which Border Patrols have, as part of the report, have failed to meet the basic hygiene standards, according to a court filing. Many of these children described the guards giving them water that tasted like chlorine. And I quote, "I only drank the water twice because that they not trusted," said a 13-year-old child from El Salvador. "It made me feel funny in my stomach and every single time that I drank it. One mother named Johanna said that we have to drink water from the toilet in order to keep hydrated. And when you look at all these things that are happening, you know, the trauma in, that is being forced down on these people by putting them in this zero under this zero tolerance policy that the administration has essentially enacted, continues to grow, and the outreach continues to grow because of the of a variety of things. Number one, people are starting to realize the horrors and the lack of accountability that continues to exist under the Department of Homeland Security's enforcement agencies, that's CBP and ICE, Customs Border Protections and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and they're learning those acronyms potentially for the first time as voters and citizens of the United States continue to call on the defunding or potential abolishment of these agencies as the outrage continues to mount. And number two, we're also learning how this administration has essentially failed at every single step of the way to protect these children while they were separated from their parents, despite the fact that they didn't have a plan to reunify them. They also didn't have a formidable plan to essentially take care of them in the adequate positions. It goes back to a lot of these underlying conversations that we've had over the time, over a significant period of time that have dragged on, not just under this administration, but also under previous administration that have had to dealt with similar issues under the lack of care under private detention systems or ICE or CBP, where we routinely find complaints of abuse, complaints of improper handle of medication or care for sick individuals under their custody, and ultimately what essentially is happening behind these closed doors that we right. as a society often learn after the fact.
Now, so going back to the court filing and the report that was filed, it was conducted by the Center for Human Rights and Constitutional Law, 200 accounts from migrant children and their parents. And what was really interesting about this report that was filed, that we have some images of for our TV audience, is that these immigrants were able to also state the things that they were fleeing from, many of them talking about being violated within their own countries, women who'd suffered multiple rapes and gang violence who were fleeing just really horrific conditions in their home countries of Honduras or Guatemala or El Salvador, only to come here in the U.S. and be treated so poorly. They referred to some of the detention centers are called, one of them is called the doghouse, another one's been referred to as the icebox, and how these children... parents talking about their children being re-traumatized. What is, and this was, what is, as far as you can tell, the status of the Flores Agreement and whether the government is going to be found in violation? Is this basically just a court case that's going to go through? Because none of this is really legal. I mean, I'm assuming, find eventually that the government has broken the law on multiple fronts, right?
So what you may see the administration say is that they can't, you know, act, you know, because of the Flores Agreement, saying that a child cannot be held in detention for more than 20 days before being released. What ultimately will happen, or I expect to happen, is that the administration will fight tooth and nail to kind of circumvent or essentially put a very non-solution up on the table, saying that we can either deport the families altogether or we can keep them in detention indefinitely, which is something that continues to be proposed in legislation in Congress so that families are not separated but at the same time are being held together under these horrible conditions that continue to surface. So unfortunately, the solution that we are that we may see in a not so distant future is that the administration will continue to do what it does best, and it's continue to detract, point at things that it doesn't like in whether in law or in court decisions, and blame those aspects as to why it can fulfill its duties while simultaneously failing to do the bare minimum to keep these children and these parents not only together but safe and well taken care of.
Juan, the New York Times also just this week posted a detailed, lengthy report, including a video of the stories of sexual assault in ICE detention facilities to women who told their stories. And of course, this is not a new phenomenon. This is something that we have seen happening under the Obama years. There were a lot of, you know, human rights groups had investigated these claims. There's been journalism about it, but the New York Times' new piece is drawing renewed attention to the conditions women face in detention. I can only imagine, as can you, I'm sure, of what women are facing, or young girls even are facing in detention right now, just over the past couple of months. If this was happening under Obama, right?
I would say that, you know, the literature and the claims of abuse continue to exist under this administration, and the amount of abuse that has undergone in previous administrations has also been very well documented. However, you know, I also want to make sure that we acknowledge the fact that these are the same agencies that are, you know, that are far away from the jurisdiction of the Department of Justice, that lack any sort of accountability. And, you know, time and time again, we see ICE, CBP essentially do internal investigations just to go in front of committees in Congress or present to Congress, you know, the wonderful numbers that they have in terms of removals of quote-unquote dangerous threats or illegal immigrants or illegal aliens, and then ask for more money. You know, but we're on the verge of another legislative fight when it comes to the budget, in which we expect millions of dollars to go essentially back into the pockets of these agencies for whatever reason that they wish to, that they wish, they claim to secure, you know, a border, build a border wall, and continue to propagate the amount of terror that they have unleashed on these families and in communities across this country. So unfortunately, what we see here is, you know, a lack of accountability from the federal government to hold its agencies accountable, number one, to the full unleashment or unshackled ICE force or deportation force that the Trump administration created since very early in its administration. And number three, the continuation, not the remediation or the intervention by part of federal officials to say, you know, there's something really wrong as to how we are allowing our immigration enforcement agencies to do and behave, and ultimately allowing the president to go out there and claim that the individuals within these agencies are, quote, very fine people that deserve every single, you know, gold star available to them. In fact, you know, if we're talking about today, on Tuesday of this week, there will be an ICE resolution being voted on. It's a non-binding document. It's essentially a show vote by members of the House of Representatives here in Washington, D.C., claiming that ICE is an upstanding agency full of patriots and doing great things. And we expect this bill to go on the floor to essentially combat some of the so-called abolish ICE legislations or calls for reform of the agency. So if you're looking for political, you know, grand posturing and statements, there's nothing better to witness than this vote that will be taking place this afternoon here in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday.
Wow. Right. Certainly calls to abolish ICE have resonated far and wide. Finally, and very briefly, Juan, what did you make of the protests that took place in the UK over the 4 days that Trump was there, many of which included people holding signs about family separation in the US? The issue of immigrant family separation in the US inspired so many people in the UK to show up against Trump. It's amazing to see how moved people were by the violations of rights under Trump here in the U.S.
Well, I think that the president finally got the crowds that he wanted to see at his inauguration, except on the flip side and across the pond. Across the pond. Ultimately, you know, it's very telling where, you know, one of your biggest allies, you know, the U.K., meets the president of the United States with complete opposition, not only his policies, but, you know, a lot of his statements and behaviors that has been that he has essentially admitted over the past year and change that he's been in control as president of the United States. So It's definitely a display of force, disagreement by one of our biggest allies, as I mentioned, and ultimately a show of how low the office of the president has been diminished by the current president, Donald Trump.
Well, Juan, thank you so much for joining us. As always, appreciate having you on.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to it next time.
Juan Escalante is the communications manager with America's Voice. He's a DACA recipient and our immigration correspondent. We've been discussing how the government has been processing immigrant reunifications, as well as a new report detailing abuse. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.